SNI Digital Innovations in Learning is pleased to present the Jorge Lazarev Lecture Series on the Origin and Development of Ideas in the Clinical Neurosciences. This course series consists of 7 one-hour lectures with discussion. The speaker will be Jorge Lazarev, Emeritus Professor of Neurosurgery, Department of Neurosurgery, Ronald Reagan, UCLA Medical Center, Los Angeles, California, USA. This is Dr. Lazarev's introductory comments to his lecture series. And we quote, "The most significant number of patients with diseases of the central nervous system live in low and middle-income countries for no other reason than the majority of people are living in low and middle-income countries." I'm going to start over. This is Dr. Lazarev's introductory comments to his lecture series, and we quote, "The most significant number of patients with diseases of the central nervous system live in low and middle-income countries for no other reason than the majority of people are living in low and middle-income countries. Nonetheless, neurosurgeons and neurologists from high-income countries author most research papers on clinical neurosciences. This disparity is prejudicial to the neurosciences as a whole. We designed the course as an introduction to some of the tools that promote the genesis and development of research ideas. This series of lectures are provided free to bring the advances in clinical and basic neuroscience to physicians and patients everywhere. 1 out of every 5 people in the world suffer from a neurologically related disease. Lecture 1 is titled An Introduction to the Concepts of Research on the Nervous System.
First of all, hello everybody. I hope you are doing well. We are honored here to attend this course, which is the Origin and Development of Idea in Clinical Neuroscience, provided voluntarily by Professor Jorge Lazarev. He's Emeritus Professor of Neurosurgery in the Department of Neurosurgery, University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA. This course is supposed to be include 6 or 7 lectures, 1 per week, and with the length of a lecture around 60 minutes. And for the registry till now, we have 118 participants, and they include around 80 medical students, 23 graduate, and 7 to 8 young neurosurgeons. Also, the participants are included from 11 to 12 countries till now, and this is a very nice start. And I want to say that we have 3 students dedicated to be a team leader. They will answer your question. And if you have any question during the presentation, please put it in the chat. And the team leader, who's Noor and Sama, will try to figure out and at the end maybe share some of the questions. Saying that, we are happy to be there. We are happy to enjoy those scientific moments, and I'm introducing one of the well-known pediatric neurosurgeons around the world, who is Dr. Lazarev, and the mic is yours. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening to all of you. I appreciate the effort you are doing to come to this lecture series or lectures or seminar series. And This alone speaks volume of your commitment to learning, that you have to be praised for that. That 75 or more than 75 or so now, and then we are meeting a new college here, are willing to spend time on Friday evening to present this. This is an enormous achievement that you all should feel proud of. First acknowledgement, English is not your first language. English is not my first language. So many of the presentation of the slides will be words for you to, and for us to get a better communication. But more importantly, except today, because it's the first lecture and introduction per se, you all will receive a PDF format of more or less the slides of the presentations before the presentation. So by Thursday next week, you should have, through the student leaders, you should have the PDF of what is going to be said. Of course, what I say expands is not limited to the slide, but you have an orientation. Furthermore, we would like to put this lecture in an expanded version and have it as a textbook per se, where we will summon all the contributors in there, all the 79 or 100, doesn't matter, with Dr. Hoss as the leader writer. And thirdly, this is being recorded, and this will be uploaded to the site of Surgical Neurology International for you to review the concepts. So again, you will receive the PDF the day before. You will be receiving and participating in the elaboration of a final text. And this is going to be uploaded. I acknowledge that I speak with an accent. I acknowledge that English is not your first language. And I acknowledge that I cannot speak your language. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we have a universal language today, which happens to be English, universal language for this type of communication. So we adhere to that specific language. This is my email address, J. Lazarev, my name and last name, mednet.ucla.edu, for you to use it anytime that you have a question about the subject that we discussed or anything that you may like to discuss that I can be of help, relevant to neurology, to the neurosciences, or to the clinical neurosciences. As Professor Hoss said, the intended length of the lectures is going to be about an hour. I aim to do it less, but as I will be speaking slowly, maybe we'll reach the hour, but will not be tremendously dense. My hope is that with the material I will be sending you every week, the themes that I didn't say during the presentation will be expanded over there. Now, that's the image of our presenting thing, origin and ideas of in clinical neurosciences, joined now by a distinguished intellectual member from Argentina. Jorge Lazarev, that's me. Why I'm doing this? What's the motivation I have for engagement and joining Dr. Hoss in this project? There is a phenomenon which is called academic injustice or epistemic injustice. It's many observations expressed in the expressed by individuals or scientists from the developing world are not recognized. I don't know why we have this echo. Are not recognized and accepted in the rest of the world. This is true. This is an absolutely fact. And Dr. Hoss can do not need to agree with me in that, but when you say I have this experience gathered from my practice in X country away from the United States, you are not thought to be that relevant. And I want the knowledge coming out from your clinical observation as a student now, as a physician later, as a clinical neuroscientist later, I want this to be part of your, that you are part of the building of the structure of clinical neurosciences in the Arab world. Iraq, in this case, and I understand that we have from other countries as well, in the Arab world. So I want the renaissance of the Arab clinical neurosciences. Surgical Neurology International is the platform provided by one of the giants of neurosurgery, Dr. Hausmann. And Surgical Neurology International is the journal that we are going to use in our lectures when the occasion comes for you to go and see the articles, particularly at the end of the lectures. It's useful for you to get familiar with Surgical Neurology International because you can look at the materials for free. It's a journal where it publishes on the web for free and welcomes many publications from the developing world, from our part of the world. Free, yes, it's free. And yes, we will issue a certificate. The best certificate that we have will be your performance 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 years from now. That would be the best certificate for me. But yes, we will provide a certificate for you because those things usually help in the developing of the curriculum. But hopefully we'll establish a relation in which we have a conversation between us and I can mentor you to the publication of some of your ideas. And that brings me to this part, the host neurosurgery mentorship. Mentor, it comes from the Greek tradition in the Iliad when Ulysses or Odysseus is about to leave Ithaca, leave his island and go to Troy for the war. He has a child, Telemachus. A boy, a little boy. So he approaches one of his best friends, is old, so he cannot join them in the war, to look after the education of his son, of Ulysses' son. The name of that character is Mentor. So that's the name and the sentence, the meaning of the mentorship. That's what Dr. Samer Hoss is of you, is your mentor. He will not tell you every day, everything what you have to do, but will be that a mentor fulfilling the name of the meaning of that word. So let's go to our concept, to our thoughts now. This conversation has a whiff to philosophy, shall I say, and has a whiff to the idea of knowledge. And the concept of knowledge, how we have ideas and how we develop those ideas and how we present those ideas, is a universal concept, as a universal concern. I typed yesterday on the web universal, knowledge, and it art, and so appears. There is an article in the magazine called Al Adab Journal, which I believe is from your university, and Professor Mohammed Fadil Abbas, who I believe he's a chemist, he talks about philosophy and science, and he says how science has advanced on philosophy, and how science is expanding. But he admits that epistemology, which is the branch of knowledge, is an important branch of philosophy through which we come to know about the development of human knowledge, means and methods of thinking. And this is what we are going to do today and in those 7 days, and the curriculum. We will do how we who are interested in clinical neurosciences or medicine in general, how we means of methods of thinking and telling your thinking, origin and development of ideas. The core issue often is what the idea is, and I say this, I was distracted by the admission. When you say philosophy and medicine, really, philosophy has four main branches, which is moral and ethics, politics, metaphysics, and knowledge and epistemology. Of those four, two are relevant to medicine, the ethics and the knowledge. So yes, we are related to this point as a such per se. And the knowledge is attained through empirical familiarity with objects in this world, with which one creates universal concepts. It is developed through a syllogistic method of reasoning, observation, lead to proposition statements, which when compound, lead to further abstract concepts. Don't worry. We will apply this to medicine, to the brain, to the study of the brain. But knowledge, what you know, what Samer Hoss know, I know, is attained through the familiarity with the objects around in the world. And the objects around in your world are the patients. Even Kant said, just read the two things on the top, that our knowledge begins with experience, cannot be no doubt. There's no knowledge without experience, without seeing. And in respect of time, therefore, no knowledge of ours is antecedent to experience, but begins with it. Why I mention that? Not only to mention something related how philosophy or epistemology is related to clinical neurosciences, but because of a poem from Fernando Pessoa, a Portuguese poet, in one of his many verses, he says, "From my village, I see as much of the earth as can be seen from the universe. That's why my village is as large as any other bit of earth, because I am the size of what I see and not the size of my own height." What does it mean? It means, again, that what you see in Baghdad, I use Baghdad as a generic name. I know that many of you come from other countries or other cities or other hospitals. What you see at your hospital, when you go tomorrow or Monday, when you go to a lecture, what you see in that hospital is as relevant, as important as anything seen by an American doctor here in Baltimore or in Los Angeles. It's the same, because what you are seeing is experiencing the presentation of knowledge. To be a clinical neuroscientist, you don't need to have a fantastic electron microscopy. You don't need to have a fantastic level of resources to be a clinical neuroscientist. And we'll work on that. Remember, this is the introductory lecture only, or the introductory conversation. To be as a such, we need to acknowledge that the source of knowledge is the experience. And the experience of what? The experience of seeing patients, the experience of seeing the representation of the disease in the patients that you see. So what sort of experience is the conversation with a patient in a clinic or a bedside? When you converse with a patient, when you think of a patient, you establish a conversation if you are good. Some of us sometimes do those things automatically, they don't pay attention. But some of us really, we establish a conversation informed by science, guided by reason, and motivated by concern for the well-being of the patient. That's what we are doing. We are talking to the patient informed by science, then thinking, guided by the reason. And then, of course, we are motivated for the well-being of that person, being it a newborn child or a great-grandfather of 20. Doesn't matter. It's for a person that we are concerned, and we are addressing their concern, informed by science, guided by reason. So in our group of clinical neuroscientists, we are interested in the reality of an individual who has the diagnosis or the presumptive diagnosis of a disease of the nervous system, which leads us to the question, and I will ask my colleague Anna van Rapp if she can close the video so we have we don't record all her movements. So in our group, we are interested in the reality of an individual who has the diagnosis or the presumptive diagnosis of a disease of the nervous system, which leads us to the question, what is the nervous system? What is the nervous system? People understand what a digestive system is. People understand what the endocrine system is, a cardiovascular system, respiratory system, whatever. What is the nervous system? What's the purpose of the action of the nervous system? That the nervous system is, and I don't know why we don't name it like that, is a communication system. It's a system that communicates our interior with ourselves and our exterior with ourselves. That's what we have the nervous system for communication. And if we think that the problem of the patient, the origin of the ideas, how the communication, either with the internal organs, endocrine, reproductive, with the control of the hypothalamus, or the external communication is affected by that, then what is the nervous system? The nervous system is a communication system. Funny enough, it's the only system that doesn't have the name implied on the function implied on the name. So that's an individual with an impaired nervous system, a patient that you may see on Monday or you have seen yesterday, can communicate, has an impairment on the communication with the environment. Not that he cannot talk, he cannot communicate with the environment. Either can't feel well because has a peripheral nerve damage or a facial palsy. It's not only motor, it's also sensory, or a spinal cord injury, or a tumor in the sensory side of the sensory cortex, or can't analyze because he has a stroke or a problem in the frontal lobe, or can't respond because it's a damage to the basal ganglia, cannot move appropriately, has a cerebellar tumor or a cerebellar lesion, or some combination of the above. So if we come and see the patient, not as somebody who has a tumor or had a subarachnoid hemorrhage, if we think of that patient as somebody who can't communicate, then we will be able to start structuring the questions about how to do research through what this patient is telling us. The beauty of this approach, of this research, I think, is that precisely you only need your two eyes and your senses to start conversing and seeing where the problem is. A gentleman who has a tremendous headache because of a sudden onset of a subarachnoid hemorrhage. Well, subarachnoid hemorrhage are always sudden onset. I mean, it's an oxymoron. For a subarachnoid hemorrhage, that person cannot talk, doesn't want to talk, doesn't want to say. You just want to talk to them and say, listen, there is this interesting lecture. What about the Champions League? No, I have a tremendous headache. Help me with my headache. That is the problem of the communication represented by the function of the nervous system. So we said before, it's informed by science. What is science? We always use this word, science. Oh, I am a scientist. What is science? And Carl Sagan, an American astronomist and divulgator of science, he had a fantastic definition. He says science is more than a body of knowledge. It is a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interrogating the universe with a fine understanding of human fallibility. Think about it. You all can be scientists. You are a scientist if you want to do that. You are a scientist because you are here. You is more than a body of knowledge. Somebody who has been a neurosurgeon for 20 years is not more a scientist than somebody who has been a neurosurgeon for one day. It's a way of thinking, a way of interrogating the universe or the patient with understanding, yes, that you are human, that you are fallible, that you may get something right or wrong. And this is a definition by a great scientist. So science is not just a body of an accumulation of knowledge, and that is the emphasis of these lectures or seminars or course, in which we'll emphasize the way of thinking of at the scientists. I have to move this out for some reason there. I think. So the a way of soon, what are the clinical neurosciences? It's a way of thinking about the nervous system guided by anatomy and physiological reasoning, and motivated for the concern of the condition of the capability to communicate of our fellow human being who happens to be there with us. So, is the ability to understand the anatomy and the physiology of that particular person who has an inability to communicate and is asking for your help. And I missed this slide to say, what is the scientific way of thinking? The scientific way of thinking is being able to ask a question in such a fashion that you answer with a yes or a no. At the end of this course, I will send you five clinical cases, and you will have to ask a question that in a, such a fashion that it can be answered with a yes or a no. Let me give this example. The professor who's going through the rounds and says, this patient has a at the brain tumor is not doing a perfect, is not doing perfect science, because this patient has a brain tumor is an affirmation, is not a question, is not a way of interrogating. Does this patient has a brain tumor? Goes for a yes or for a no? Well, that the patient is hemiplegic, yeah, could be for a tumor, could be for a stroke. There are two options or two alternatives. You are asking a question in a way that can be answered with a yes or with a no. Somebody decides to study epidemiologically. Let me see, I have to view the admitting two more people here. Somebody decide to study how many brain tumors are in one particular area of town. How many brain tumors are in Basra? That's not a scientific question. That's a question for epidemiology, for other things. Are there many more brain tumors in Basra than in Erbil? Yes or no? That's a scientific question. Are there many more brain tumors near power station for cell phones? Yes or no? That is a scientific question. When you approach a patient in the round, you say, this patient has a brain tumor, is not a scientific question. If you approach this patient on the ground and then you ask, has this patient a brain tumor? Yes or no? Does it have yes or no at a stroke? That is a scientific attitude. Sounds easy. Sounds simple. It's not that simple. And I will tell you, I will send you at the end of the course. This five thing is not is independent of you completing or not completing or that the certificate is not an exam. But I will send you at the end of the course five clinical cases, and I will ask you to be able to write at a question, just in one sentence, a question that can be answered or present this case in a yes or a no. And then, of course, I will send each one of you my opinion, or if it's perfect, needs to be corrected, which, again, is not part of the, is not as an exam. It's actually train you to be able to form all those questions. So, informed by science, is a way of thinking, guided by reason. How we reason in front of the patient, how we reason in front of a patient, how we reason in front of the problem we had with the sound in the beginning. My problem, and according to Dr. Professor Hoss, his problem, according to me. But I mean, we had the double thing in here. So how we reason? We reason in three ways, not in four ways, not in five, not in two, in three. And not, this is not that because Lazarev is saying that from Los Angeles, is because this is how we reason. As you saw, one of the important themes of knowledge is, one of the important themes of philosophy is knowledge, and the knowledge is the reason. So we reason through induction, deduction. Example. And I wait anybody to raise their hand. What is this? Anybody volunteers? What are we looking at? By one. Come on. One. There's no volunteer. They're gone. Okay. Somebody, two participants, raise their hand. Okay. So yes, because Jaffer, what are we looking at?
It's playing as a soccer.
Soccer, exactly. Beautiful. Excellent. You, boom. And I'm sure Ibrahim also thinks of this of as a soccer. But now, okay, what is this? No. What are we playing?
No. I went there online. Yeah,
okay. You don't know what they're playing. Because this is a game that is played only in Argentina. It's called Pato. And it's like similar to the game that is in some part of Afghanistan where the people runs with a goat. No, there is a, the name escaped, no? That the two teams and they compete for a dead goat and they score the goat. Well, in Argentina, they play all the same, but with a ball. So in the left, you did inductive reason. Inductive reasoning, we have a whole lecture admitted for that on the next week. Inductive reasoning is the reason that this is a soccer. This is a brain tumor. Oh, this is hydrocephalus. Boom, goodbye. But the other one, when you find, okay, then what you do? You say, okay, it's a game played on horses. It's a game playing on horses that apparently there are at least teams. Because there is one with a red shirt, other one with a pink shirt. You look, maybe they're not playing in Scandinavia. They don't look Scandinavian, those guys, and there's no snow. There are not horse Scandinavians. So you go to Google, and then you start putting in Google, okay, game played with horses, two team competing for a round ball. And then comes with an answer. And then the answer is more or less, and then you compare, then you go, then you see the answer, and then you check, and okay, that's the deductive method. Now, if I put a, if I present this lecture to Argentinians, my country of birth, they would say soccer and pato. But when I did similar lectures to the Argentinian, I put this guy Busaki, Buscasi, I don't remember the name. The guys are lost as you are with the pato, or as I would be, and are as lost as when I see patients that have conditions that I don't know about. So those are the two methods, the induction and the deduction. We will expand on those methods on the next lecture, of course. No? So we have those two methods, induction and deduction. And among the many other things that is happening now in your brains is this. The induction method and the deduction method, they have a cerebral representation. They did functional MRI on individuals who were doing induction and individuals who were doing deduction. And different areas of the brain flare up. So your way of thinking of induction, your way of thinking of deduction, is an anatomical structure. It's not an invention from the philosophers who didn't have anything else to do. It's an absolute reality of what you're having. You know, the induction and the deduction per se exist. Differential involvement of left prefrontal inductive and deductive reasoning. Because again, as I said, there are three ways of reasoning. When you sit next to a patient, or when you talk to a patient, you are informed by science, guided by reason, and motivated by compassion or concern. Informed by science, science is a way of thinking and formulating questions that can be answered with a yes or a no. And the reason, there are the two ways of reasoning. And the third one is the one that will make you great scientists. And we will discuss of those in the law after. So this is the induction and the deduction again, and this is extracted from a paper from Pat Crowherry, which is called Clinical Cognition and Diagnosis Error. So you have patient presentation here, and you either recognize what happens, like the soccer, or you don't recognize, like the pato. And you understand, I say soccer and can be hydrocephalus, and pato can be any other of those diseases that are not familiar to you, to me included, to Dr. Hoss, to anybody included. And then you go in a type of processing and reasoning. And again, today is only introduction, in type one, the process, the type two process, and then you reach to finally reach a diagnosis. And so we have here, we have A, B, C, D, E, and F. All those lesions are similar, are ischemic, central region with range enhancement. Some of them are tumors, glioma. Some of them are abscess. Some of them are trauma. Some of them are lymphoma. Okay, but now what you do? Well, how you process the system of reasoning, induction, deduction, abduction. This is the things that we'll be talking in future lectures. Again, today is just the general presentation of the subject. So, and then, not only how to be a good doctor, oh, this is a lymphoma because it's not close to the cortex and the patient, blah, 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 blah. I want you to be great clinical neuroscientists. I want you to publish papers. I want you to show to the world the tremendous intellectual capacity of your clinical experience. And then go to the syllabus. This is just the last part. So this is July 14 was the presentation, conversation. We just decided to see who we are. And you will receive this as a PDF. We agreed on that situation. I know now that it's easier for me to make Professor Hoss the co-host, so I don't have to interrupt every time to admit the late arrivals. That's good. So on July 21st, on the next Friday, we'll talk deduction, induction, abduction, a theoretical introduction, theoretical and practical. I am a surgeon, as many of you want to be, or many of you will be, but anyway, I'm into the practical thing, what induction, deduction, and abductions are. On July 28, will be a conversation through applied to cases of historical relevance, how induction, abduction, and deduction were relevant in Semmelweis case, in the case of the chlorpromazine, in the case of the Helicobacter pylori, how those things were actually used or utilized by the clinical scientists. All of them clinical scientists. None of them had an electron microscope. Then in August 4, we'll talk about deduction, induction, abduction applied to Chiari type 1. You will see the tremendous variations of knowledge about Chiari type 1, the tremendous variation of surgical treatment, and the importance of having a critical approach to that particular disease. Then, on August 11, we'll continue what we did with Chiari, but we'll apply to a case of pediatric glioma. A case I will tell you about, you will know perhaps through the PDF the day when I receive you, when I send you on the 10th. So induction, deduction as a case for clinical research and a case of pediatric glioma. Not how to diagnose a pediatric glioma. The glioma is there. You can see that on the MRI. You don't need to what research. I mean, it is the child, it is the MRI, you can see, or there's a glioma. But how we can use induction, deduction, abduction to create a branch of research and create a clinical paper. And that's what happened to me with two cases that I will discuss with you, and I still receive invitations for those cases. On August 18, we will summarize of how to apply to writing of your clinical observations and hypotheses. Okay, I know induction, deduction, abduction. How do I make a paper out of this, out of the set of observations that I found? Hopefully we'll be able to, hopefully I will have the courage to get to some old papers or papers published in Surgical Neurology International and show that even a very good journal like Surgical Neurology has very, very good papers and not so good papers and papers that could have been better. But you, knowing in Dutchian, abduction, and the Dutchian, will be able, I don't know why I went to admit in here, will be able to, I have to go back in here. So in Dutchian, the Dutchian abduction on August 18, you will be able to create the paper using those systems based on your clinical observation. And then remember the three tenements of the paper, of the relation of the genesis and of the philosophy of medicine is that we spoke of compassion or concern. The deduction, induction, and abduction can be applied to a medical ethical dilemma. Not to a moral dilemma, to a medical ethical dilemma. And we will use that induction, deduction, and abduction to apply to ethical dilemma. In essence, to summarize for the late arrivals, is you will have a PDF of this. Oh, we have a really late arrival now. So summarize for the benefit of this new arrival is you will have a PDF on the day before. I will send the PDF to the student leaders and they will distribute to you. Ideally, that PDF of the following week will have some improvements from the past week, all the things that I couldn't say because I was distracted and the first time. So you will have the PDF text of this. You will have this recorded, will be uploaded on the web. And now we have a real late arrival. We record it for you on the website of Surgical Neurology International. Thirdly, I should have said that in the beginning is not, my intention is not to conflict with any of the lectures that you have at your medical schools. It's important that I would love to expand on neuroanatomy per se, but maybe you have your own professor of neuroanatomy, and then that's a different story. And the last thing, one of the things that you should draw and get from the mentorship of Dr. Haas is not ashamed of publishing. He's not ashamed of showing to the world what is he doing. He's not ashamed to actually tell, yes, I am Samer Haas, I trained in Baghdad, and I am very good at what I'm doing. And this is the proof. And that is crucial for all of us. Remember, we need to expand, glow the world of clinical neurosciences, of the Arab clinical neurosciences. And you have, and with this I really finish, I repeat that the major wealth you have is the number of patients that you see. And what you see is what it is. We will discuss about this issue, induction, deduction, and abduction, how to contrast induction, deduction, and abduction. In any way, with that and fulfilling the thing, I say thank you. You know, we need to have a see. And Tabhilo Samet just arrived to see our thank you. Thank you. And I guess some people had some problems with the hour, you know, with our per se. Any questions so far? We had 79 participants, chatting here. Thank you. Thank you to all of you.
We hope you enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to help us improve our programming and for our application for CME credit. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. Send your questions, comments, suggestions, and applications for CME credit to ausman@snidigital.org. This series of lectures is supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation, owner of SNI and SNI Digital, and the Waymaster Corporation, producers of The Leading Gen, a television series, Silent Majority Speaks, Role Models, and the Medical News Network. Thank you.